So despite the fact that Biggie only had two albums out before people started calling him the GOAT, Kendrick has had like eight albums out now.
Listen
and people
up,
still don't.
I hate to interrupt, but welcome to Hate to Interrupt episode 24. I am Ethan from youtube.com/Gulliff, and I am joined by
Nick from Stop Culture.
I'm VHS guy, the other Nick.
Yeah, and so today we're going to be talking about a couple things, but starting off with David Pryor's 2020 cult horror psychological thriller, sort of like a classic now, I guess, sort of like a modern cult classic.
Yeah, it's
at least.
Very much a modern cult classic.
Yeah, The Empty Man, which is actually one of Chris Stuckman's favorite movies of the new decade. Did you guys know
Our
that?
Our God.
Is that true?
I saw He had a video titled from like 3 years ago titled The Empty Man Needs a Cult Following. And
that's
I think
the
that
only
probably
reason,
helped it.
That's the only reason I ever watched it, because he said it was good, so it must be, and it was. So
okay.
I just watched it because Gulliff told me to. So
I recommended this because I have been hearing about it for ever since it came out, really, just being like, this was a really cool, weird, different horror film that completely tanked during the pandemic and nobody saw it.
Yeah, but it seems like maybe it's just Chris Stuckman manipulating the view counts and everything, but I feel like a lot of people have been talking about it for the past couple of years. Is that not the case?
I've heard little chatters about it, but nothing concrete, you know, like not a lot. Ever since that video, that was kind of the only thing.
When I did my little online digging, it seemed like there's a little bit of it's quite a bit of people online talking about it.
I mean, I thought this movie was really great. But before we get into that, does anyone have like a plot synopsis?
I figured you would be the perfect person for a plot synopsis because this movie feels right up your alley.
I had like a millennial type joke about it.
Do it.
Where it was like, The Empty Man, a 2020 film about my life being the empty and sad. But
yeah, that's millennial.
I can try if y'all want.
Yeah, you can go.
Yeah, you go for it.
All right. Basically, he's previously a cop. He's like a private eye. His daughter goes
without
missing.
Spoiling it, yeah. Give the plot. Yeah.
Oh, you want me to spoil anything?
Without spoiling it. Just
start with the prologue, though.
Yeah, that's what I was doing. So, his daughter goes missing along, and she has a bunch of friends, and they go to this bridge, and there's if you go on a bridge and you blow in a bottle and think about the Hollow Man, the first day you'll hear him, the second day you'll see him, and the third day he comes and stabs you in the face in a sauna. And so he's trying to find his daughter, and it turns out there's some mega cult that's basically like Scientology, but with like no chill. And he goes to find his daughter. I don't know. When do I spoil? Do I spoil anything? Like, what do I
I mean,
do
well, let's.
It's basically this dude trying to find his daughter.
Yes, we can work.
Like
this is a full-on spoiler discussion.
Well,
we just want to get the basic.
The fact
premise.
That it's his daughter is even a spoiler in and of itself, Nick.
Yeah,
you're not supposed to know it's his daughter.
Really? I feel like I got that like right away.
Well, they don't say it outright.
I mean, they hinted at it like halfway through, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Initially, like, you think she's a, you know, just a daughter of like a family friend that he has, well, sort of like a romantic relationship with. That's pretty obvious, but the daughter part isn't obvious.
Everything's kept kind of vague in this movie in general. Like, they don't really go into much detail on anything.
Yeah.
It's a very vague type story.
But
not quite upstream color levels of vague, but
it's approaching that
territory.
It's very much, I mean, there's a big twist at the end. I mean, he's a tulpa.
Yeah. He's a tulpa.
Yeah, so
he's a thought form manifest.
Yeah.
Which fans of Buddhism and Twin Peaks The Return would be familiar with the concept of tulpa. Tulpas.
Analog horror.
Is that a thing that comes up in analog horror?
Oh, all the time. It's like I think Greylock is all about, which is a very popular analog horror, is all about tulpas.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a cool concept.
I don't understand this creature very much. So my
the empty man?
No, like not the empty man himself, because that makes sense because he's a manifestation inside of an actual being, which was the guy at the beginning that fell into the fucking cave, his body, right? That makes sense. There's a creature stuck inside of this guy's body that has somewhere to manifest, right? But this guy, does he have a body, like, or is he just some thought that's just floating around? It doesn't make any sense.
The main character?
The main character, yes.
I took it, once the reveal happened, I kind of talked about this with my brother, because he had seen it a few years ago. And I took it as like, I mean, she even says near the end, Amanda, she's like, you were born 3 days ago, which I took it as we literally created you out of nothing 3 days ago. Like, we finally perfected the Tulpa that you are, and that's what you are, and we implanted all these memories into you. Because then you also see in when he goes to the cabin and he's going through all those like those old VHS tapes that are called Manifestation 11, Manifestation 12, and it's all their failed Tulpa creations, because they're all sitting around a table like chanting, and then this horrible thing with like seven fingers on each hand is like, it's part of its stomach's torn open. I was like, oh, that's a failed Tulpa that they tried to create when they were trying to create a new empty man.
Yeah,
but the whole thing is like, does like, is he, what is he, is he, is he just a memory? Is the whole movie just a memory? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
I mean,
to me.
I they don't say this outright, but I think you could interpret the movie that he actually did die with his wife and his son, and then she was like, oh, we could create these, because she was saying that like the in-between entity, that's like the actual supernatural entity that the empty man channels. So that entity needs guilt and sorrow for this to be like a successful process. For them to actually be empty, they need those feelings of guilt and loss and regret or whatever. So she was like, what if we create this Tulpa that believes he actually had all these memories of cheating on his wife? But it, what if in real life he actually did just die that day, you know, in that car accident? I mean, did you guys think that was a possibility?
I mean, I think they left it so vague that it's like anything could technically be the case, you know?
Because he had to have been a real person at some point, though, because that is her dad, right? That's actually her father.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Is it? I took it because then you see... when they're at the funeral, and I was like, they keep showing photos of some guy who, and I took it as like, he is taking the place of who that guy was. He doesn't look like him, but like, I don't know, maybe it was like that they implanted that guy's memories onto this new body. Because I took it as he was created, like, when, as soon as we jump to modern day, he was created a bit before that, like a few hours before that, which
yeah.
just kind of dropped into the story.
No, but so like that guy, he could still be in the story regardless of whether the Tulpa existed for all those years or was just, I mean, the Tulpa was definitely created, but like I'm trying to figure out whether this guy, James Lasombra or whatever, was ever a real person at first. That was my main question. Like, was he the Tulpa based off a real guy, or was he just created for a specific purpose?
It seems like he was just created for a specific purpose.
No,
yeah,
but
I don't think he was a real guy.
The husband that you're seeing in the, you know, in the photos, you see him in the beginning too. He's right.
Oh,
he's right there. Yeah. And he, I mean,
the thing is all of these things are just memories, right? Like that they made. And it felt like almost like the wife was in on it too. Like
the wife had to have someone to cheat on with, because that was, she was like, what can we stop punishing ourselves? They both cheated. Like he cheated on his wife. I don't know if this is an implanted
memory.
But I
think she was
not,
just a part of the cult though. I think she was just playing in on it.
I took it as they implanted all the like their relationship into his mind. This is a really fucking confusing.
See, this is exactly like when we were having that discussion the other day about how I hate ambiguity. Like,
oh,
this is what I don't like, because it doesn't because it feels so lazy. Like because if you think about a movie like The Sixth Sense or like The Wailing, right? Those movies where they have like the big reveal at the end, you're like, oh, I fucking get it now. That's so sick. But then like a movie like this, I'm like, I don't know what happened.
I mean, well, all you need to know is that this guy was created for a purpose. Whether or not he was created based off a real, like a real person who did once exist at a time, or was just created whole cloth just to serve the purposes of this cult, it doesn't really matter that much. So I don't think it's like totally ambiguous. I mean, they do explain exactly what happens. That's the only question that I have, and it could go either way for me, you know.
But the twist makes everything ambiguous. Like it starts making everything feel either like metaphorical or like fictional, right? Like him shooting the the guy at the end. Like, I don't even believe that that actually happened. Like, it starts to make you question everything. And then I'm like, what was the point of watching this?
Well, I mean, I a lot of that was happening in his own head. That was like him wrestling with the actual supernatural being, like the in-between one. That was happening in his head. And then I think when he ends up back in the hospital room, like that is actually real life again. And then you're seeing that everybody who's working at the hospital was a member of the cult, right? I mean,
but
that's kind of what
I took
from it. He's just
he's possessed by now.
Yeah, he's just a vessel for this.
That's why he's like, get rid of the old
he's
body.
So he's an actual body with a spirit in it.
With the empty man in it, yeah.
Okay.
No, he is the empty man.
He is now the empty man.
The supernatural being is, I think, called the in-between one or whatever. That's like a different thing.
Okay.
They need the vessel to be empty for that spiritual being to exist.
So he is a physical being.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. But he's only existed for 3 days. He's existed just for 3 days, apparently.
No, I got that part. Okay, that makes more sense now.
Yeah.
That was the part that was like, I was just like, I don't know.
I mean, but, you know, despite anything that happens at the end, I think this movie was really well done, especially the part that you were alluding to before, Ethan, when he goes to camp elsewhere or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the main thing I remember from this movie is that scene when he's watching from afar, like the flames dance up. And then when he comes back down to Earth, like they're all looking at him. And they
that was
take
terrifying.
A step. Yeah. They take a step towards him. They're like all, you know, walking as this one conglomerated mass. Like that was really fucking scary.
Yeah. I do think this gets into another issue where it's like, they have that bit where they kind of undercut the fear with a joke where he's like, no thanks,
yeah,
or whatever, and then runs
I was
away.
Reading some. I was reading some stuff online. And everybody's like, "This movie's so funny." I'm like, I didn't think it was funny at all.
The hell, are you reading reviews? That was like the only joke, but I was like, "All right, you've ruined the tension."
No, I could go on Reddit and like read some of this shit. Like everybody's saying the movie's like hilarious, which I don't get at all.
I don't understand that at all.
That was kind of like a Marvel sort of audience stand-in type of joke.
Yeah.
I think. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I guess that's kind of what Jordan Peele named his movie after, Nope. Like, a scene exactly like that one, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I also like that crowd scene where they're mimicking, or, like, stepping towards him when he steps back, which is basically the exact scene from the prologue.
One thing that...
Which, can we just talk about the prologue for a second? Because, like, as we were watching this, as I started it, I was like, all right, okay, you got the, you know, the cold open... And then it just kind of kept going. Like, this was a long-ass prologue.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, I think it's the best part of the movie is the first 20 minutes.
Really?
I think it's such a perfect horror snapshot of what the premise is. Because the whole second half for me really sagged. I think maybe...
It felt so disconnected up until, like, the very, very, like, last 10 minutes, though.
I thought it was really cool. I felt like there was much more of like an engaging main character to hold on to for the, you know, the actual bulk of the movie. Like I really did like the whatever his name, Jason LaSombra.
James,
yeah. I looked up what that means. It means the shadow in Spanish. So that's pretty deep, guys, actually.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Did you, whenever y'all first turned on the movie, did y'all like see, because they were like, everything's obscured in this movie. Like, they love to just block people's faces with either shadows or blur or just weird shit. But did y'all think that it was Aaron Paul and Jake Johnson whenever y'all first saw like the intro characters?
No.
They literally just looked like, what are those people that just dress up as somebody else, cosplayers. Yeah, they just looked like Aaron Paul and Jake Johnson cosplayers.
That's funny.
They got close-ups.
I can
you
see
thought
that
he was gonna call the empty man a bitch.
I like Aaron Paul.
Yeah,
me too.
I remember because when the first character, what is his name, like Nick or something? The guy, is it Nick? The guy that falls in the hole. Shout out to you guys, representing all the Nicks out there. When he falls into that hole and you get to see that like genuinely incredible prop of like the bone creature, what the hell do you guys think that was another person, or do you think that is the original being, whatever this whole thing is?
I think that's where this all stems from. That's like a shrine dedicated to the actual supernatural being, I'm pretty sure.
Do you think that's its body, like its decayed body?
I mean, it could be. It looked like a pretty tall being.
Like, had really bad arthritis and like 20 fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, so it could be, for sure.
And it had all these like bone stems coming out of its back. I don't know.
I will say the green screen effects and like all of the like visuals of that intro scene were really ugly. It like they had really bad haloing. It looked
there was a couple really, green screen shots.
Whenever they fell off
like,
the edge of the mountain, I was just like, oh my god, looks horrible. And then they took it away from the like the mountainside, so I was like, hell yeah.
Did all this stuff that was on your desk just fall off a mountain?
No, my dog decided to shake.
Oh. Okay.
Damn it, dog, we're recording.
Well, what I'm about.
I didn't really ever feel like it looked that bad in particular. I thought, especially for being like a pretty mid-budget movie, I thought this movie actually looked really good.
No, I think for the most part, it genuinely has like great cinematography, great lighting, everything looks visually good. There was like one or two shots, I think, in the beginning that were just like they did film on location, but there I think there were some they had to do reshoots for or something, but they just looked a little off to me. But yeah, no, this movie looked really good.
I think the
good.
Cinematography was good, but I think they like butchered a lot of this movie in post-production. Like they put so much like glow on everything, and like did you remember the scene whenever he's talking to his daughter's friend in the car? And they kept just panning. They kept switching to this shot where of him from outside his car, and it's just a big glare on his face. And I'm just like, you can't see anything. Why are you choosing this shot?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I did not notice that. Oh, it's the cinematographer for The Kissing Booth. The Kissing Booth 2. Mm. The Kissing Booth 3.
But that's all
some other horror movies.
That's all he's known.
No, that would be really funny. No, he's also done... one of the Purge movies, one of the Texas Chainsaw remakes, Man on the Moon from 1999.
What, the Jim Carrey one?
Jim Carrey, yeah.
That movie's good.
Cool. But yeah, no, actually, speaking of that scene in particular, I don't know exactly what you're referring to, Nick, but I thought the editing in that scene was really good, actually, how they show her, the daughter's friend, looking out the window. And it's shot in a very eerie way, but you don't actually see anything scary. But it makes you feel scared just the way it's shot.
I don't know. Whenever they show the kids.
That's what I was going to say. Like that was like sort of a reveal at the end. But it's sort of just tension building up until then, which I thought was good.
Yeah. I think they made it super. They made it way too obvious that the daughter was like kind of like malevolent in that bridge scene.
I don't think so. I think. You could definitely tell something was up because she was way too into it. But I wouldn't say that gives
anything
away.
Being super weird, and she was like smiling and stuff when everybody's freaking out on the when they're about to run away and stuff. I don't know. But
that's like kids just like being spooked, Nick. You don't remember being spooked when you're a kid.
Yeah, I love getting a good spook.
She was just trying. I was thinking like, well, this girl's like a spook aficionado. I didn't think that was like necessarily meant she was evil or a cult.
I was expecting her to be a bad
Nick
guy.
Nick doesn't
the whole time.
Like goth girls because they're too scary.
Dude, I okay. Her fucking Velma ass bowl cut was
her
so
haircut
bad.
Was horrible.
So bad.
She looked like Will from Stranger Things.
That's the thing that makes you realize she's a bad person before anything else. Yeah.
It was pretty rough. I didn't hate this movie though. It was. I feel like I've seen this movie but better already.
Like what?
Like literally, I would like The Wailing. I would go watch The Wailing again over this.
I like how it felt like the first half of this movie felt kind of paint by numbers. Like even up to that bridge scene where it's like, hey guys, let's have a, you know, let's play around and call the evil boogeyman, the bye-bye man. and then you get into the second or the middle portion, which I'll be honest, I was struggling. I was like, this is dragging a bit because it's just kind of turns into him deep diving into a cult. And that revolves around a lot of scenes of him looking through filing cabinets and going through folders and walking through alleyways and going and not really talking. And he does a lot of talking to himself. Did you guys notice that? That was kind of annoying.
Yeah.
He kept being like, what the? How'd they get this? What?
Yeah, whenever he drives away from the people chasing him, he's like,
what the hell was that?
Oh my God.
It's like Leon from Resident Evil.
What dude, the one thing that made me laugh. One thing that made me laugh so hard in this movie was whenever he goes to the cult place and they're like, fill out this questionnaire.
Yeah.
And he fills it out and it's like the sky is actually red because science tells you it's blue. And it was like every single thing. It was like, it was the most absurd. It was all conspiracies. And it's like, I know you're trying to make this like correlation to like some other cult or something, but like most cults ease you into this shit. Like, this is ridiculous.
Is that I didn't understand. Yeah, like they were, you were supposed to, you could get in if you said all that shit was true. Is that what it was?
I took it as like, no, it's like if you have, they show all these different options. Like if you have any doubts or feel any truth towards any of these sentences, mark it down. And they gave like a three or four pages. Yeah. And I figured it would be like, they're probably going to, it's like this, it's a cult. They're probably going to, emotionally, mentally tackle these people in a different way depending on how they mark up their doc, you know, their
but
piece of paper.
But cults don't start with the most extreme shit. They ease you into it. And this, there was no easing. It was like, we're saying a bunch of absurd shit right off the bat.
Yeah, but that was not even their beliefs, really. Yeah.
Yeah, that was asking the person, what do you believe? Do you think this is absurd? And then it's like, oh, I think the moon landing's fake. Yeah, that person's going to have a very different spiritual experience.
The receptionist looked like she was straight out of Twilight, too.
They didn't go like Xenu and like spirit cleansing or whatever, Scientology or whatever.
Ah,
and
welcome. Pray to the empty man.
They don't do that either at Scientology.
Scientology, they're basically just like, we're going to help you do well in life. This is all just little baby life lessons to help you deal with stress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's where you start. That's how you get them.
I thought the Stephen Roots, that's his name, right? That actor who is the cult leader. His entire speech was good. It was really well written. Like when he went into the Nietzsche quotes and everything, I thought all that stuff was really, really well done, which makes you realize that this movie is like undoubtedly a cut above shit like The Bye Bye Man, even if it makes you feel like it might be going there in that direction in the beginning. Because those movies would never have anything that good in them, you know?
No, because they kind of stop as soon as they get to the junk where it's teens getting slaughtered by a ghost. That's kind of all they have to offer, whereas this was like, that's what you think we have to offer. I mean, even in the name itself, the Empty Man is paralleling Slender Man, you know, the Bye Bye Man, the Boogeyman. So it's already playing on your expectations in that way.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys think the cops were involved with the cult at all?
Were cops in this movie at all? I forgot they were at the very beginning.
He goes right to the cops right after he leaves camp elsewhere.
Either his body was previously a cop or they were in on it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Just like,
because how would they have known he was a cop before unless the cult told them all his memories were? That's true. Yeah.
Which the cop, the main cop dude was a terrible actor.
Oh, the black dude?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't think anyone was that bad.
And the wife. The wife was bad too. Everybody else was pretty good.
The wife, she's in a lot of stuff. I probably have seen her face more movies than anyone else in this movie.
It also was a first-time director, so maybe it was like more.
Well, besides Stephen Root. Stephen Root has been in a lot of stuff, but the wife,
he's the only recognizable actor.
That was basically like a glorified cameo role. He was only in that one scene. But
yeah.
I mean, the wife, I don't know her name, but she...
His name is Maren Ireland.
She's been in a lot of stuff, right?
She was hamming it up pretty hard in those early scenes. She was in.
She was in I Am Legend, Hell on High Water, The Irishman, The Boogeyman from 2023. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she plays the Irishman's daughter. That's right.
Who plays De Niro's daughter?
But yeah. for a directorial debut, I would say this movie's pretty solid. Like,
yeah, this is great
for your first go at it. You know,
I just don't know if he's gonna get a chance to make another one because this thing, just they didn't give it a chance or market it at all, and it tanked.
Well, I also it was through like a big production company. I was surprised. Like
it was during the Disney merger, I think. So Disney, Hulu, Fox, or whatever, they all just dumped it. It was a Fox movie, I think. That might be wrong.
Damn. Well, yeah,
he's also an older guy. I think he's like 54 now or some shit.
Damn, that's crazy that you just do this for however long. You get to make your first movie at 54 and then you just never get to do it again.
Yeah.
It's a rough industry, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, it only had a $16 million budget, so I mean, I'm sure he'll get another job at some point.
Like, I mean, he made a lot of cinematography, I think.
Made a decent movie for not too crazy amount of money.
He seems to direct a lot of making of documentaries, like on the DVD, like Blu-ray bundles. Like he made the Inside Llewyn Davis, which is the making of Inside Llewyn Davis. He directed that. He directed the How the Social Network was made. A bunch of those. Same with Panic Room.
Oh, so he must have a relationship with Fincher then, right?
Probably, yeah.
He does. Cool. I was looking it up. That's like, because I was looking up what cameras they were using, and apparently he like got a lot of recommendations from Fincher.
It does look very like Zodiac aesthetic.
One thing that bothered me a little bit is like, well, I guess I will say bother. It didn't look bad. I hate when I notice things that I shouldn't notice, because it very much looked like they like were using filters to try to make it look like they were using old lenses, but they were very much just shooting on like 8K digital cameras. And it just looked kind of weird at times.
Well, there was a couple of shots in this movie that I thought were like exceptionally impressive. Like, do you remember when he's looking at the map and then it starts flipping around and they do like the drone shot?
The fade in.
Yeah, that was really, that was really awesome. Well done.
And then it even just like goes all the way straight down and just into the following the car. That was like, I was thinking about how that would be planned out.
It was super seamless. It was great.
I don't think the cinematography is bad. I'm just saying, like, I think a lot of the stuff that I'm talking about is more so like stuff they didn't post.
Yeah. But yeah, overall, I feel like I'm feeling a 7 on this movie. I thought it was really good. I don't know about you guys, but
I'm at like a 6.
I was while I was watching it, and I was at the middle point where it was really dragging before the reveal, because this is a movie where I think the reveal recontextualizes the entire movie and kind of adds layers to it. I was floating at a 5. To a 6. I'm really bummed. I need something to win me over. And then the ending recontextualizing everything bumped it to a 7. And I give it a like on Letterboxd, which means I liked it.
Yeah.
It's okay. Y'all aren't crazy high with it. So I mean, we're not too far off.
Wait,
I wouldn't blame anyone for saying this is a 9.
I gave it a 6. I just wish that the ending hit harder for me. I saw the twist. I didn't see the twist coming, but I saw a twist coming, and it just didn't hit me very hard.
Yeah, well, there's got to be some kind of twist coming, because you start looking at the runtime left, and you're like, how are they going to wrap this up? Like, nothing makes sense so far.
Yeah.
So they have to just like try to wrap it up with this weird explanation of him being a tulpa, I guess, but I don't know. What are some other stories of tulpas in them that you've seen, Ethan? Because I that's like my favorite sort of horror, is to have like somebody there that's always a staple in your life that actually isn't them. Like, that to me is really scary. That's not exactly the way it's used in this, but
yeah, the only thing I can think of, like, I feel like it's just very popular in analog horror online, specifically it's called Greylock. It's like this, it's actually pretty good. It's like a 10 episode series on YouTube, and the entire premise is based around tulpas.
Was the Babadook a tulpa?
No, that's just a representation of grief and sadness.
Yeah.
That's just a regular metaphor.
Oh, wait, did you guys hear that they might have, I heard some varying reports on this, but they might have identified the who Jack the Ripper was like a couple days ago.
Oh yeah, I did hear about this.
Yeah, some DNA. There was like, they've always had a couple of potential perps for who Jack the Ripper probably was, basically since this happened, but they never were able to pin it down on any specific one. So I think what they did was, they've always had like one piece of evidence that just got, you know, has been kept somewhere, and they got people that were descendants of this particular guy. I think his name was like Aaron Kosminski. They got him to give their DNA, and they were able to like come up with a pretty conclusive match that it was potentially this guy. But I don't know. With stuff, this was 160 years ago now, basically, right? I think. Yeah, I think this was
one
like
of those things
the late 1880s. So yeah,
I'm glad now that we know that we can now safely walk out at night. Women can know that it's safe to walk out at night now that they caught Jack the Ripper.
Now they just have to worry about Jack the Ripper's ghost, who could potentially be even more dangerous.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because it was like, I asked my wife about this. She was in psychology a lot in high school. And they talked about Jack the Ripper and all the theories that people had on exactly like who he might have been. And the two popular theories were it was either a woman or it was a doctor, because they had such like a detailed knowledge on female anatomy, like internally, because it was always women, or specifically prostitutes, were killed by Jack the Ripper. So it turns out it was very tropey because it was a barber.
Imagine like getting away, like being on your deathbed, knowing you killed all these fucking people and you just nobody knows. Like, that'd be insane.
Is that your dream, Nick?
You're like, I can die happy. I killed so many. Oh, man,
could you imagine?
That's fucking crazy, though, bro. Like imagine he they was, like, a religious person. He's just like, I can't wait to go to fucking wherever the fuck I'm going, dude.
I mean, that's what Zodiac always talked about, was that every person he killed would get to go with him into the afterlife.
Do you think
I guess you have to make up some weird shit.
I wonder if that's how Benjamin Button felt. Like, instead of killing people, he got away with aging backwards and only letting like probably 15 people in the entire world know about it. That's pretty cool.
Do you think aging backwards would be better?
I haven't watched it. Is he birthed like a full-size person?
No, he's birthed like a tiny old man. Yeah, tiny wrinkled.
That's hilarious.
Old man.
So he looks like a snail.
Yeah. Benjamin like, Button is a good movie, though, actually, I think.
It is a good movie.
It's,
like,
it's
you get
like,
you get the shitty part out of the way early, you know?
Yeah, but then, I mean, the whole then movie is about how, like, there's really only, like, a 10-15 year gap where him and Cate Blanchett, who's the love of his life, like, they actually line up where it's sort of acceptable for them to date. Like, she likes him as a friend for the first, like, 20 years of his life, but it's only when they start getting into their late 30s and 40s where they sort of look like they're the same age, but then they have a kid and she's like, he's actually like, you can't raise both of us, like you can't grow old with me, I'm becoming a fucking toddler, you know. So
movie's so wild.
Yeah,
that's one with Bradley Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, but guys, speaking of analog horror, there's have you guys heard of the Monument Mythos?
Yes, have not. I think there's a YouTuber named Wendigoon. He has a video I've been like sitting in my watch list.
It's that's where I learned about it too. But it's based, I don't know where exactly it came from, but Wendigoon goes into it. It's just like one of those analog horror things that like the whole backstory behind it is through all of America's biggest monuments, like Mount Rushmore, Lincoln Monument, Washington Monument, there's all these like giant monsters living under them. And they you know, at night when no one's watching, they have to feed on human sacrifices and stuff.
That's fucking metal as hell.
Yeah, it's really weird.
That reminds me of like Lethal Company or something.
They have like weird edited videos where you can see like snake legs coming out of the Washington Monument and stuff.
Are these just like those like what are they called, where the people just post shit online and they just make
analog
up those
horror.
Stupid stories? Is that what it is? That
you're talking about creepypasta?
That too. Yeah, those are just like written stories.
Interesting. I never got them. I never understood the like appeal to
them.
You should
listen to Creepcast. That's a funny podcast. Wendigoon and Papa Meat from Meat Canyon. They just read shitty ones and good ones.
Yeah, I mean, Creepypasta is kind of, I feel like that's not as popular now. Now it's been replaced by these analog cards. It's basically like more of a high effort version of it. Because Creepypasta, that's where Slender Man came from. And stuff like the Empty Man is talking about, you know, where it's like, you know, like the internet's version of Bloody Mary, like go in front of the mirror and say Bloody Mary three times. It's just the evolution of that stuff, you know.
It's crazy how much content is just created by random people online nowadays. Like I have friends who literally read, like, I forget what it's called, like lit something, but they just literally go on Reddit and like read novels that people are releasing like every couple weeks or something, and it's just it's like a like RPG based storytelling stuff, and it's so weird. People are like, people are kind of more open to different types of content nowadays.
There's so much stuff. Like there's 60,000 new songs that get uploaded to Spotify every single day.
Damn.
I mean, I'm sure it's even more YouTube videos, which, you know, as three of us being YouTubers, anytime your video even does mildly well, it's important to remember that it's cool that out of all that competition, yours floated to something that resembles the top. You know, that's pretty cool. You know,
yeah
I agree. It's kind of wild that we never talk about us being YouTubers. Like that's how we all met and how we're do like what we do most of the time, but we just never talk about it.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Because being a YouTuber is really cringe.
Is it cringe? I don't think being YouTuber is cringe. No, I think maybe being like certain types of YouTubers can be
if
cringe.
If I'm the type of YouTuber that's sitting there like, what's up, guys? Welcome to my video. We are going to be blowing up a Tesla.
I mean, if you're blowing up a Tesla, that's kind of sick.
Then I'm doing great if I'm blowing up a Tesla.
I don't think being a YouTuber is cringe, but I'm reminded that some people do based on the reactions that I get in real life when I tell people that I do this.
I think letting people know that you're not a big YouTuber is cringe. Like being a small YouTuber is cringe.
Well, I mean, I don't even know if it's that. Like, I didn't even say either way. I was like, oh, I have a channel where I do some of this and some of that. And they're like, I could just see people's eyes wandering away and like wanting to go talk to someone else. And this has happened to me like multiple times. I'm like, all right.
Really?
Yeah.
People usually are fairly interested in it whenever. I mean, I don't really bring it up to a lot of people, but. When also, I do, I feel like people ask a lot of questions.
I live in Brooklyn. You have to remember, everyone sucks here.
That's true. Everybody only cares about themselves.
Yeah, everyone.
Like, how can you help me?
Exactly. Yeah, they care about you insofar as you can bring them some kind of status or help them in some way. That's not really true. I mean, I've met a lot of nice people here, but a lot of people are that way. Social climbing fucks. But
whatever.
That's how it is Austin too.
I always forget that. I have family that occasionally watches my YouTube videos or whatever, and then I'll have to be like, oops, just some of the shit I've said, or like a lot of like political stuff where I like disagree with the majority of my family. And I'm like, oh, I forgot they listened to my videos, so I just called them out. Fucking idiots.
You don't get political that often though, Ethan, do you?
No, occasionally. I'll just drop something occasionally, and then I'll be like, oh, I forgot, whoops. I watched your video. It was great.
I've made like two mentions of me not liking Trump in my videos, and I don't know. I don't usually talk about politics all that much. I have aspirations to do it more eventually, but it's intimidating. It's easier for me to talk about things that don't matter as much, you know. Like not that media doesn't matter, but like politics have way more of a material impact on people's lives. So I feel like you have to be one of those egghead type people to really comment on it, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like my niche is so small already, like compared to a lot of people, that like I don't want to alienate people more, and I also don't care what people's beliefs are. Really.
If you have a Nazi in your I'm not allowed to say that. If you have an N-word in your chat,
no, not that one either. That's
if you have a one of those guys that does a salute in your comments, being like, you know what, I really relate to this guy. Thanks, yeah, buddy. You're the best. What are you going
to
do?
Let's put Nick to the test here. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't care. You're going to be like, thanks, buddy. I support your rights to be a terrible scumbag.
No, that's where I utilize the heart message button and don't reply.
Oh, so you're platforming these people, sir.
You would heart their messages? Why?
Wait, what did they say? Wait, what did they say in this instance?
They literally said, I'm a proud Nazi, and I really agree with all your opinions. You're great.
Yeah, but they would never say that. But if they said that, I would just
theoretically.
I would just ignore the message and leave it there.
Just leave that comment there.
Wow. Yeah, why not?
Well, Nick, here's a good example. Like you made a video comparing Dune and Lord of the Rings, and like you probably don't know this, but Nazis really like Lord of the Rings and don't like Dune as much because they feel like Dune is a story about emancipating indigenous people, whereas Lord of the Rings is not by virtue of anything that's actually in the movie. It's more of the adaptation is like a very white story about, you know, good versus evil in a Judeo-Christian sense or whatever. So a lot of Nazi people really, they think of Lord of the Rings and the Northmen, stuff like that, as like the pinnacle of white culture or whatever. So you could, you know, with no actual intention on your own, you could put something like that out and have some guy with a username like 1488 Nazi Kanye guy or whatever be like, dude, this was epic as fuck, like thank you for supporting the movement, you know? Like
I get those comments sometimes, the people that are like or what do they say? Based video, bro. I'm just like, all right, cool, dude, or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
but that
I hate
mean...
this woke shit.
Oh,
I just don't care. Like, they can take what they want from my videos. It's not my intention. So it's like, I'm not going to just sit around and try and correct them all day.
I think, you know, earlier you guys asked, like, is it awkward to tell people that you're a YouTuber or a small YouTuber? I will always hold credence in the fact that I have never had to tell anybody that I'm a Star Wars YouTuber. So that's good. Because I think if we're talking politics intersecting with art, for some reason, fucking Star Wars always ends down that path.
Yeah,
I think the closest I ever got to something political in my videos was my comedy video.
Yeah, and that was, and just, there were so many comments.
There
like,
was a lot of them.
Comedy. Woke did it.
Yeah, but it's like, I mean, and to be to their credit, I guess it did for a little bit, but it wasn't like a long term thing, right? It was like,
I wouldn't even say it was that. I would say it's a much more complicated issue, that, or a much more complicated discussion, which is why they slap on the very simple vocabulary of going, this is,
yeah, there's obviously, this is, there's obviously, this more is to lib. It. And that's that was kind of the point of my video, but yeah. Like, but I think it is very easy to just say, like, people are afraid to offend people nowadays.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
that's so true.
I think there's some of that, but at the same time, I think there's been a huge resurgence of comics that are like, their only thing is that I don't give a shit. I'm gonna say whatever the fuck
Dave
I want.
Chappelle.
I'm Bam Margera, except I'm a comedian and I'm gonna
like
say
Shane
whatever
Gillis
the fuck
shit.
I want.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, Shane, I think Shane Gillis, he's a really interesting comedian to me, because I think if you listen to him unfiltered on his podcast, which I do, I'm a fan of his. I like him, although we don't align politically. But he's definitely more, way, way more conservative than he actually lets on in his stand-up. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you would agree with that. But like, because like, if you listen to his stand-up, he's often like, oh, my dad's a dumbass Trump supporter. I come home, watch, like, he's watching Fox News, and it's embarrassing to me. That's like the gist of a lot of his jokes. But then if you listen to him on his podcast, he's a lot of times like, eh, I kind of actually like Trump, you know, like I don't actually know where
he,
to
like,
place
met
him
in the White House and shit. I mean, I think I just don't like care unless you're like going overboard with it in the sense of like, I don't know. I think if you're trying to like, I think on either side, left or right, if you're a famous person and you're trying to sway people's political opinions, like the average audience, like, I think you're a piece of shit. I think that's not your place. I don't think that you're qualified to be giving the general audience political perspectives and like trying to sway people's votes in either direction. I think it's stupid because
I totally disagree.
They're people who are paid to play pretend. They literally stand in front of people and they're like, okay, pretend to be somebody else for a couple minutes.
They're
let's pay
artists.
You millions of dollars.
Yeah, they're artists. And first of all, like, I don't like this take when it's like, oh, you what you need like a political science degree from Harvard or like experience in public service to like speak on politics. It affects everyone. It's politics, by definition, is the arena of everyone that lives in the country. So to say that you can't speak on it because I'm not saying
you can't speak on it. I'm saying I don't take anything that those people say seriously, and I don't put any credence to their political like views. They're also in a, like, it's the same as like whenever you're somewhere, like say I'm in like the middle of fucking Kentucky, like in some podunk ass town, I'm not going to take the political views of some random person I talk to there seriously. Same for if I'm in the middle of LA where everybody is super, super liberal, I'm not going to take any of their fucking like opinions very seriously either. There's just so many extremes, and a lot of people in Hollywood are just built on those extremes.
Right, but so,
I don't like that on either side.
Why is an opinion more valid because it's not extreme though? Is it like, are the only valid opinions things that are moderate? Like, you
it
have
does
to be
feel
right
like a lot of
the
times
middle?
When you listen to these, especially like younger celebrities, they have very, very like imbalanced political takes.
I mean, the thing is, when you have extreme problems in a country, sometimes extreme solutions sound like they make sense, which is why a lot of people liked what that Luigi Mangione guy did, you know, where they're like, what, how many people have to die indirectly through our healthcare system?
I genuinely think
there's
our,
some actual consequences for this thing.
I
you know?
Genuinely think our, like, it's a meme and people don't understand the difference anymore. It gets lost. I think it was a joke that people supported him, and now people actually support him because
no, I don't
it was
think
funny
when
for
it
a couple
happened,
weeks.
People were like, hell yeah.
Yeah,
like, I don't think so.
No, man. I don't. I genuinely talked to so many people that were like in my real life, not even internet people, like real people at my work or in person, neighbors. They're just being like, "Do you see what he did? It's pretty good."
See, that's insane. Do you understand no, that? That's insane. They weren't. Right?
I think that's just.
Like, yeah, that's no, like there's think... something wrong with people who think it's okay.
I don't right? know. I thought it was okay.
I mean, do you think, was George Washington a hero?
I don't know enough about George Washington to say.
I so mean, I he led say. The revolution against the British. That he broke the American colonies free from colonialism, from the, you know, taxation.
I'm not saying the guy he killed is a good guy or he did great
I'm
things
just saying,
or anything.
George,
I'm just
George
saying...
Washington used violence to become a hero in the American public's eyes. And now this guy, I think the only reason people might not, they have a different opinion of him is because it just happened. Whereas maybe 200 years from now, people would be like, oh, that guy started something. He was a revolutionary.
He just killed some sociopathic capitalist. Like, that's all it was. Like,
yeah, it's a symbol.
But you understand, like, he is probably a pretty unhinged person for doing something like that, right? Like,
maybe
a lot of the doers in American history and world history are psychotic in one way or another. That doesn't mean
you
they
kinda have to.
They didn't do something that started. Something. I mean, you know, it's way too early to tell what that will start, if it will start anything. I mean, a lot. The thing that I don't appreciate about it is
it's
like,
all going to. I think a lot of it's going to depend on where the court case goes, for sure. But like,
I mean, the thing that I don't appreciate about it is that Luigi now, since he did that, the conversation is more about him, I think, than what he wanted to maybe incite, which is that's not really what this should have been. I think that's kind of unfortunate. He became, like you said, he became a meme. He, since he's handsome, he has girls like, you know, wanting to fuck
him
or whatever.
On him, yeah.
You know, that's not really what this the best case scenario of this, but you have to expect some of that. So I don't know.
I don't know. If somehow the stars aligned and I became somehow famous, I would never try to sway anybody to make it. I would push people to be informed and make their own political opinions, and I would push people to vote and do what they think is right, but I would never tell people what to do because I don't think that's my place.
I don't know, because it's like you don't really generally like talking about your political stances very often. So I feel like it would just be kind of that, the same thing. You just wouldn't really talk about it. Whereas like these people, they're not trying to force people or push someone into a direction.
They are,
just
though.
Stating
Have
their
you heard
political views.
Fucking, what's his name? The new Hulk actor. Forget his fucking name.
Mark Ruffalo.
Have you heard Mark Ruffalo talk about politics, bro?
I love it. I love Mark Ruffalo.
It's horrible.
Mark Ruffalo was like a huge supporter of Bernie. I thought he campaigned for Bernie. I thought he did a really great job of doing that. Because again, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think if you want to use the social capital that you've gained through your career as an artist to support causes that you believe in, you're not forcing anybody to do anything. There's like literally nothing morally abhorrent about it. I mean, I think people in America, like, you know, middle Americans, people like us, like, It can feel like you're being talked down to. So I can understand why some people don't like it. They're like, oh, these fucking Hollywood elites that are trying to tell me what to do all the time. You can either listen to them or not. But when it comes to like the more like weighing the morality of them doing it or not doing it, I think it's like it's totally on them. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, really. You know,
I don't know. It personally rubs me the wrong way. I'm not saying they shouldn't be able to do it, because obviously they should be able to do whatever the fuck they want. But like, it makes me respect them less.
I mean, I feel like when things are so polarized, when there's so many really divisive issues in the country, it's almost like, why wouldn't you say, if you're out there and you have millions of people listening to you and you feel like you can make a difference, why not try, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's almost fucked up to not say something about it. Rather just like let the world burn and be like, oh, well, it's not really my place to say anything.
I think it was even like Taylor Swift a few years ago. She got to a point where she was like trying to stay neutral, like not even neutral, just not give her opinions on it.
Yeah.
But she had so many fans that were just like super far right. And she's just like, I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to tell you guys I'm very left and I think you guys... are psychos. I'm paraphrasing. And then she lost a lot of fans. But I was like, yeah, it would probably eat at you for a while. Just like, I'm, you know, these people think that I'm representing a part of them through my art, and when I don't want them to think that.
Yeah.
But I think it doesn't. I mean, I don't know. I personally wouldn't matter to me, like, what people take from my shit.
I don't know. I get really fed up with the whole, I hear a lot of people that are just like, you know, both extremes are bad. We need to be somewhere in the middle, guys. We need to calm down. When it's like, the left.
That's so true, though.
When it's like the hard left is like, hey, we have a lot of like subgroups that need rights, and we would like free healthcare because people are poor and dying on
that's
the streets.
That's not true, though.
And then
the fucking far right
is like, let's kill trans people. Let's get rid of minorities.
What you're let's saying is the marriage. People who are more in the center.
No,
most not at all.
I would
dude.
Not say that.
Not at all.
No.
What do you mean in the center? I mean,
what to, do you? Yeah,
that's the like, other what, thing. To like be, to actually be in the American center nowadays, you have to like you have to countenance all those things. You have to be like, oh, trans people don't have rights anymore. There's going to be ICE raids throughout every major American city. And well, I guess to be in the center, you have to be like, I just don't really care about that. Whatever. That's why I feel like the centrist position is kind of fucked up at this point, because it's like.
But people who are in the center still have that decision. They can decide the lesser of two evils, right? It's not, I'm going to vote for this side no matter what. It's, I'm going to fucking see what works best for me, right?
It's just, I find it at the statement absurd when people go like, oh, well, I'm not like for, let's bring up gay marriage. When people are like, I'm in the center, you know, I'm not for it. I'm not against it either. And I'm like, okay, so if you're not supporting it, then you are against it. If you're not directly being like, I'm okay with this,
but I don't think
then you are against
it. I don't think most people are like that, though.
I've had someone, literally a family member, say that to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't heard that too much, but I mean, I don't think that's. I think sitting in the center on an issue is whack. I agree with you. Because I think everybody has a stance on something.
But Nick, like the reason why you don't hear that anymore is because there were a whole lot of people who at the time you might have considered annoying being like, no, we actually do need gay people to have the right to be able to marry. And those people were loud enough for a long enough period of time that eventually there was a Supreme Court decision that said, okay, I guess we can actually do this now in 2013. Like fucking Obama and people like Hillary Clinton, they were on the fence about this issue. They were like, oh, you know, it's a states' rights thing, or I'm not going to really fall on it one way or another. It was only after there were enough people like, what the fuck are we doing? You know, that they were actually given the right to do that. And it takes a lot of people being kind of annoying about it to disrupt the flow of daily life enough to make people realize
you
like,
have
oh, this
to be
is...
heard to make change.
I think we're saying the similar things. I think I just didn't understand what you meant. Where like, because obviously everybody has a stance on something. Some people just don't want to say it, obviously. But yeah, I think being open to arguments on both sides. I don't think you should be so dead set on everything one side has to say, because that's not the case for me. I think we should have a like stricter border protocols. Like I'm more conservative on that side, you know.
I mean, my thing is, it's like, especially in somewhere like America is so skewed to the right that by just saying you're in the center, like you are a conservative, just because every other industrialized country offers things like state healthcare to its citizens, universal healthcare. So if you're going to say that you don't support that, that's a conservative position in any other country in the world. So I feel like to actually be on the left in America, you would have to go way beyond that. You would have to talk about the dismantling of capitalism and everything, which our most prominent like leftist figures aren't even saying that. I mean, Bernie Sanders is really, he's a socialist in name only in terms of like what he actually ran on. He was running on like basic like social democratic
socialism
reforms.
Light.
Yeah. Like, and people called him the most radical person in the goddamn world.
Meanwhile, Trump isn't a radical somehow.
I'm definitely more conservative than both of you guys, but I'm definitely not a conservative. I don't know.
Well,
but I'm also in Texas, and y'all are, I grew up very different from y'all.
Yeah, sure, I mean, there's a lot of conservatives in New Jersey too. There's a lot of people who that I grew up with that, for some reason, would like fly fucking rebel flags and everything, like Confederate flags. It was like,
it's so cringe.
Especially,
I grew up in a tiny ass little hillbilly town, so yeah, I've had a lot of that too.
You have no excuse. Like, at least this argument doesn't really sway me at all when people from the South do it. It's like, it's our heritage. But if you're from New Jersey flying that flag, it's like, what the fuck excuse do you have?
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to bring this up too. You guys notice, like, I was to talk about, since we're talking about celebrity worship in a roundabout way, I wanted to talk about, you know how anytime a celebrity is like vaguely considered a good person, or they do things that like you know how Keanu Reeves will sometimes be like, when people talk about how amazing the stunts are on something like John Wick, he'll be like, oh well, you know, that's actually, a lot of that is down to my stuntman, and he'll name the guy. And to that, like, people in the comments will be like, faith in humanity equals restored, you know, for like just that
simple
shit.
You just won comment of the day.
Yeah, it's just like simple things like that that make people think that celebrities are actually this, like, so much better than normal people, like Keanu Reeves, for example. There are certain celebrities
literal
like
basic
that.
Decency, and they go, oh my God, you're so, you're such but a think, kind person.
Yeah.
I think a lot of that comes from the, your expectations from celebrities are so low, I feel like. And then when they, like, actually are a good person, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But to me, it's kind of like, I think people, whether they admit it or not, like, they're just waiting for a celebrity to give them a reason to worship them. You know what I mean?
I actually tweeted this the other day, but I was working at a tech job for a while, and I had this guy, he was like a couple desks down from me. He starts crying middle of the day. He's bawling his eyes out. I was just like, what the hell is going on? This is a fucking like 25-year-old guy. And I go over, I'm like, man, what's going on, dude? Are you okay? He's like, Dr. Disrespect just admitted that he cheated on his wife. He's just fucking bawling his fucking eyes out because some streamer cheated on his wife.
Oh my God. Actually, now that you bring that up, Culture Nick, do you have a pair of sunglasses?
It's not anywhere near me.
I feel like if he threw a pair on, you'd look like Dr. Disrespect.
I don't even know who is that guy. I don't know.
He's like a Twitch streamer who's also like kind of corny. I don't know. He's like some old dude.
He's not the dead rat alarm clock guy, right?
No, that's
Asmongold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, people tell me I look like Charlie Penguin Zio or whatever all the time.
You're like a
I
more handsome that. Charlie.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Okay. So let's bring this back to film. I have a video that I'm making.
Yeah.
I have a video that I'm making right now, and it's about like relatability in film. And there's obviously like a million reasons people can actually like a movie, right? But I want there's only certain movies that really like stick with you, and you're like, oh, I just love this movie so much. Like, what is the main reason movies stick with y'all? Is it relatability or something else?
I don't know if it's necessary. Maybe sometimes there are definitely like actually our Trainspotting 2 conversation. I was telling you guys like that's a movie that I can really relate to and has like a special place in my heart. So definitely sometimes if it hits on an experience that I feel like is A, underrepresented, and B, something that I can feel really aligns closely with my own life experience or whatever, then sometimes I can be like, yeah, like that movie, I would even be able to overlook some of the faults that I see in it to be like, oh, that's actually a movie that really means a lot to me. But I would say that's probably not the majority of films that I have like in my top 100 list or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What would y'all say is the most important? Like, what's the thing that makes them stick out to you?
We'll let Ethan go first, though.
I don't know if it's relatability, because I'm looking at like, I don't know. I'd say the films that more feel like they have a personal tie to me emotionally, where I have like, I hold them in a special place in my heart, is like, super basic theme of just like how like two of them, like, so Everything Everywhere All at Once and then The Iron Giant, which are two incredibly sappy films that I love, not in a negative context or connotation. It is just, they've just got a theme about why kindness and like love is the best thing in the whole goddamn world, and that's something that I have a personal connection with. I can ignore a lot of faults with the movie itself. And then I have like No Country for Old Men in my top 10, which I don't really have any personal relatability to it, but I love it.
But I think those first two are relatable. So the way I broke it down in my script is there's situational relatability, which is like you actually having specifically been in a situation similar to that movie. And then there's emotional relatability, which is like you felt a way the movie is portraying, right? And then there's aspirational relatability, which is more what I usually feel. It's like, I want to feel that way, or I want to go through that situation the character's going through, right?
Like Rocky.
Or I feel like I'm going, yeah, like Rocky or mm-hmm. like The Disaster Artist was my other example. And then there's cultural relatability, which is more like Everything Everywhere All at Once, where like you relate to it on a cultural level. Like you're like, I this is my world, right? Being brought to screen.
Wait, can you explain why is The Disaster Artist aspirational?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I haven't seen it, but why was that?
Like Tommy Wiseau, personal hero of mine.
I mean, kind of, honestly. Like he had no talent. He just believed in himself. Like, and everybody was talking shit to him the whole time. Nobody believed he could do it. And guess what? He fucking did it, bro. That movie's super inspirational to me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you have just a random pool of dark Romanian money in your bank account to make whatever you want. I mean, I guess I could see it just in terms of like perseverance, I guess. But yeah. So hearing you break it down into that those three categories like that, I definitely know where you're coming from. Is there definitely movies like A Complete Unknown, for instance, that would be like aspirational relatability, which is, you know, watching someone like Bob Dylan become one of the biggest cultural icons of all time. It's like, you know, I don't even think most people even aspire. I don't aspire to that, but I think that it's just cool watching somebody do that and to put yourself in that, in that situation for just an hour and a half or whatever is a cool thing to see. So I like that movie on that level. But yeah, I guess like I was saying before, I don't know if it's relatability that always brings me to a movie. Like sometimes I like movies for a ton of different reasons. Like sometimes it'll really wow me on a technical level, or there'll be you know, a way that I'll have to like force myself to relate to it because it's such a, you know, it's such a foreign, not literally foreign, but like foreign to me, to my lived experience situation that I'll have to, it's the job of the movie to make you, to put you in those characters' situations, regardless of how far they actually are from your own lived experience. You know what I mean? So when a movie can do that, I can really appreciate it. Like something like Moonlight, for instance, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, that's a great one.
I referenced Moonlight in the script too. Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's part of why I didn't like Dune, right? Because I think I look for relatability in films much more than most people, and I think the movie just didn't really make me feel anything for most of the characters, and that was like really understand their sides of things enough, and that's maybe more my fault based on expectations of what I want from the movie than the movie's fault, but. But yeah, I completely agree.
We can't get into the Dune conversation again.
We're not going to get into the Dune.
We'll save it for Dune Messiah.
We've broken it down so many times. Wait, Nick, did you like the Dune book series though? Well enough.
I read the first two. I liked it okay.
Are you excited for Dune Part 3?
No. I really liked Lady Jessica in the book. I think her character was like my favorite in the entire book series.
Yeah, she's
and
cool.
It was like, and it's like what kept me interested. And I think they kind of didn't do enough with her in the movies.
I mean, she's really not that big of a part of the second book, you know?
Yeah.
Lady Jessica.
Yeah. She's essentially gone for the entire thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I know where you're coming from, Nick. I think that especially nowadays, I feel like it's something that that casting directors and, you know, people that are writing stories, I feel like they're trying to make the film as relatable as they can, whether it's through casting people that look like whatever now looks like, you know. I think of like people like Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya. They look like the aspirational versions of what people in Gen Z want to be, like to be that cool and that attractive. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's probably not really what you're talking about, but I think there's always been like that kind of aspirational nature to casting, to put people on screen that people want to see themselves in. You know what I mean?
I just think I like Timothée Chalamet because I'm a zoomer. I think he's a cutie pie.
I like Timothée Chalamet. I've seen him act well before. That's why I like him. But then sometimes he's just in things that aren't amazing.
I was never really that big on him until I saw Dune, to be honest with you guys. I was like,
By Your Name was like his first big get, right?
Call Me By Your Name, in that movie with him and Steve Carell, like Beautiful Boy or whatever. That movie was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, that movie. Yeah, that was a good movie. It was. I just felt like I guess I hadn't seen him showcase the whole ton of range, which, again, I think I've said this before, but it's not the most important thing to me. It's I don't need an actor to be extremely transformative for me to really appreciate them, but I kind of want to see it before I put them in the upper echelon of the other actors in their generation. You know what I mean? Like I was willing to put Timothée Chalamet up there until I saw him do Paul Atreides, which he just went to a completely other level in that movie. I think, like, those scenes when he's whipping up the Fremen in that, you remember that speech that he gives? There's like millions of Fremen around.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was
such a hype scene.
Yeah. It was incredible.
He's no Leo. We'll just say that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Leo's overrated, honestly, if we're going to have that talk.
You don't remember when he had...
Leo's overrated?
He had dry lips and boogers coming out of his nose when he was like eating a fish in The Revenant and fighting a bear.
I forgot about The Revenant. Never mind. I take it back.
Bro, Leo is not over. He's been He's been killing it since he was like 13 years old.
Like Gilbert Grape?
Yeah, he had...
Gilbert Grape, fucking... I mean, Titanic was his first big role, and he's amazing in Titanic.
That was before Gilbert Grape?
I think it was right after.
Yeah, because I feel like that was the first time I remember seeing him was Gilbert Grape. But maybe was he like a legitimate child actor?
Yeah.
But he's like a teen in that movie, right? So he was a little kid on screen? I don't know this.
I think he started acting when he was like 9 or maybe a little bit younger, but I think might have been a lot of commercial stuff.
But this was one another thing I forgot I wanted to mention. But speaking of Leo, he's and Chalamet, actually, how important do you guys think it is for actors to be really attractive for them to get work?
Not important. I don't know how the industry uses it.
It depends on the type.
For the industry.
You can make it as a supporting actor pretty easily, not being attractive.
Yeah.
But like as a leading man, you kind of got to be at least in some way, shape, or form handsome. I mean,
I don't think Mark Wahlberg. I think Mark Wahlberg looks pretty ugly, but he's a leading.
Mark
man.
Wahlberg is 100% handsome. Are you crazy?
This is
one of those bad Nick takes.
Nick thinks that Mark Zuckerberg is hot now. Did you know this?
Yeah, Mark Zuckerberg is like more of a babe now. Dude, he used to look like a lizard. Now he looks like a human.
He literally just does this all the time.
He stepped up from lizard to human, and Nick's like, I fucked that guy.
Are you really thinking Mark Wahlberg is ugly?
I don't think so. I mean, Mark Wahlberg, regardless of whether he's actually like really handsome now, he was like a sex symbol in his early 20s.
That's true. If you look at his Calvin Klein photos back in the day, bro.
Yeah.
I think he's just got a weird face.
But like, think like what leading men, like there's like Benedict Cumberbatch, like that's ugly and a leading man.
Well, he has his own unique look.
But he
look.
Has so much charisma. Like, he has so much charisma.
Yeah, you need to make up with conventional looks with Riz off the charts if you're going to be leading man.
Do you know any incredibly attractive performers that are terrible actors?
There's a bunch.
That are, like, still getting work constantly and are in good stuff.
Yeah, that's a good question. So incredibly attractive performers that are still getting work despite the fact that they suck. Is that what you said?
Yes.
I mean,
there could have been an argument for like Lily Rose Depp until Nosferatu.
The main Skarsgård.
Bill or no, Alexander?
Alexander.
Oh, Alexander's great. A horrible actor.
What?
No, he's not. He's bad. He's a terrible actor.
The Northman.
Northman. I mean, you guys haven't seen Succession, but he's really good in Succession, too.
Oh, is he in Succession?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe he's gotten better, but his entire early career from, like, True Blood to, like, fucking Tarzan was horrible.
Well, I have a hot take about Sydney Sweeney that...
She's not a very good actress.
She's okay. I don't find her attractive at all, really.
She's in Madame Web.
And I feel like she has been kind of propped up on the fact that every man under whatever 50 in America thinks she's really attractive. I don't really see it. But
she looks like I've seen like millions of prettier girls in person than Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, that's kind of my thinking on it.
I like her. I think she gives a fun performance. I have watched all of Euphoria, and I think she's actually pretty talented. I don't think she's a bad actress.
I don't think she's terrible. She's just not. She never did anything to wow me, and I think that now she's just kind of. She's just going off the strength of Euphoria and like kind of propping, whether it was the roles themselves that propped her up or whipped her up into a sex symbol, or her just being on social media and the things she's done or whatever. But she's definitely become that. I feel like she at this point in time is like the number one Gen Z sex symbol, right? Probably
for white women. Yeah,
sure. I'd say Kristen Stewart could make that list. Who's a bad actor?
Who compares against her for Gen Z?
Zendaya?
I mean, but...
Mikey Madison?
I mean, I don't know. I don't see people... I'm judging based off, like, thirst levels that I see of dudes. That's what it needs to be. And the way they're portrayed in media, too. Like, Sydney Sweeney gets up on SNL, her monologue, like, I don't know why all these guys think I'm attractive, but I'm enjoying it. Like, that's the way... Her public persona is all about her sex appeal at this point, it feels like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Know who I fucks with? Sabrina Carpenter.
I have a few of her songs on my playlist. I think she's really talented.
We're just going to turn the last 20 minutes into the thirst section of the pod. Like,
another actor who sucks that's attractive that still gets work is Kristen Stewart. Kristen Stewart's a fucking terrible actress. She's had a couple okay roles, but she's got no range.
You don't think
you guys have seen Twilight, right?
She doesn't have vampire Riz?
You guys have all seen the Twilight movies, right?
Yeah.
Yes, of course. I love
all
them.
Of them.
I love them. I actually like them.
I saw like the first one.
Somewhat ironically.
You got to watch all of them, Nick.
You got to watch
all
of them.
They're so funny.
I remember
they're really funny.
I saw the second or third one where it was like Taylor Lautner turning into a Wolverine or something. Yeah. And I was like, this is gone. And then I thought the first one was actually really good. I remember liking that when I was a kid. But
honestly, the first one, I can see why people like it. Like, I've rewatched that one. That one is the best out of all of them. Because I'm like, I don't think it's good. I think the acting is weird. I think the writing is weird. But like, it felt like there was... No, listen. I can tell they were trying. And then the rest of them is just like slob.
Were they, though?
I think so. I do think it's pretty fucked up that the director, she was like, it was like this low budget. They even talked about it. They're like, we felt like it was kind of an indie film because it was pretty cheap. And like this, I forgot the director's name. But she like made it and it became this huge success. And then they took it from her and just gave it to a bunch of white dudes afterwards. A bunch of white old dudes. Catherine Hardwick. That's who it was.
I don't know. I mean, but yeah, Kristen Stewart sucks.
Yeah, anyway, back to that.
No, I mean, I didn't see this movie, but didn't she get a really good reception for doing that Princess Diana movie
Spencer?
She did? Yeah, was that good?
I didn't see that.
I didn't watch it.
I heard she was really good in that movie. So
I have not seen that, but I have yet to see her in something where
I thought
she was better than mediocre.
What's that movie where Mark Zuckerberg plays a stoner that's a CIA agent that gets activated, or an undercover agent that gets activated?
Mark Zuckerberg is actually in it?
No. The guy who plays Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, it's he's in it with Kristen Stewart, right?
Yeah, the action movie. Where
is it called I know this one.
I actually liked that movie. I forgot what it's called. But she was pretty good in that because she was just kind of playing a little comedic role. She wasn't trying so hard.
American Ultra.
Oh.
And I think that was written by
Max Landis.
Nepo Baby.
It's
Nepo
Max,
Baby, yeah.
It's Max Landis.
That's actually a perfect transition. Do we want to talk about Nepo Babies?
Yeah. Nick,
go ahead and give us the quote we were talking about earlier.
Well, Nick was having a huge defense of Nepo Babies earlier. I don't know why.
He loves celebrities. He's celebrity worship. He's got posters of them all over his wall.
I'm not defending Nepo Babies. I'm saying it's kind of inevitable. So you might as well just fucking accept it.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
There's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to do? Blacklist every child of actors?
Well, I think the only thing that people can do about it is what they have been doing, like turning the phrase Nepo baby into a kind of derogatory meme about these people, because they, you know, not saying that they haven't worked for anything, but they've worked so they haven't had to work nearly as hard.
There's just been no struggle, really.
Yeah, just being given shit.
The only times I have a problem with it is when they act like it's just as hard. Like, oh,
yeah, I changed
my name. I don't even talk about my dad.
Like Duncan Jones, is that who you're talking about?
Yes. It's just like, dude, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, but Ethan, what's the quote you're talking about?
So there was, well, this is more about the Instagram followers thing. So they did, I think it was Maya Hawk started talking about this first, where she kind of went into talking about how working with a lot of producers, the way they hire actors is they will have a spreadsheet of all the actors that they are considering in auditions, and next to all their names will just have their Instagram follower counts, because they want them to be able to promote the film to a huge number of their own followers.
Mm-hmm.
And Ethan Hawke even talked about this as well after that quote came out, of it, like, he's like, they're looking about hiring actors who have not acted before, just because they have, like, they're a TikTok star or they have a lot of followers or something.
Yeah,
I'll have to find the.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. I think that's fucking, that sucks. That's bullshit. I've also seen that in the music industry too. Like that guy Oliver Tree was like, oh, my label wouldn't let me put out an album until I reached like 2 or 3 million Instagram followers or something. Like, why sign the guy then? But yeah, to bring it back to the Nepo babies, because my immediate reaction to that was, before I knew all the context, I was immediately just jumping down my hawk's throat, like, oh, like, she would ever need to fucking worry about that, blah, blah, blah. I mean, Nick was saying that, like, yeah, this stuff exists all throughout every facet of industry, so there's nothing you can do about it, as he was saying, but it's like, I feel like it's particularly insidious in Hollywood, because the capital that you have as a famous person is your name. So if you're born with that name, you can parlay that name into any other industry, the industry that your family was successful in, but also a new one, like what Maya Hawke's done. Because she's famous, because her parents are successful artists, which is also, I don't know how deep we want to go down this road, but that's also kind of like being given some kind of like genetic gift, because your parents are, you know, that's, I don't know. That's not really a valuable conversation, but you know what I'm talking about?
I think that is a valuable asset that people don't actually take into account, is like, you're kind of probably being taught from a young age in a way that like a lot of people aren't.
Yeah.
Which kind of is sort of up to my next point, is like, I think more the issue is the money, because I think if anybody has millions of dollars and they want to be an actor, you could technically do it. You could fund somebody else's movie and be like, look, I want to be the fucking main actor in it. I'll give you $2 million to make a fucking movie. And they'll do it. I mean, anybody can get their foot in the door in Hollywood just with money. I don't think being in Hollywood has anything to do with it. It's more, I mean, if you can act, like.
Yeah, but I mean, that's my thing, is like you were alluding to too. It's like, they, from a very young age, they're brought up in a household that values artistic pursuits above basically all else, because it's two parents that are highly successful actors or artists operating at the top of their industry. So that means if that kid even whispers at like, oh, I want to act too, they're like, all right, we'll put you in front of the best fucking acting coach that money can buy. You have also, you're growing up in a house with excellent taste. Like, you're able to develop your artistic persona just because your parents are so incredibly supportive financially and emotionally. That's worth way more. It's not necessarily bad.
I'm just pointing out the facts. You have an advantage. Yeah, over it's just everybody
that's,
else.
But that's everything. Like, no matter what we're doing, there's somebody who's going to be at an advantage over us. Like,
yeah, no, I'm just saying. Like, but you said that you could just do it with money, and I don't think you necessarily can, because like, so have you seen all the, there's a huge trend of this, like billionaire sons, fail sons, they call them, like, that are trying to get into some kind of artistic pursuit, but since their parents are like tech people or business people, they're not necessarily brought up in a culture of artistic talent. It's an entire different ballgame for them. Like, these people like Maya Hawke, they're like formed from the moment they're fucking able to walk to be artists. It's different for billionaire kids. Like, it's not just money.
I completely agree. I'm just saying, like, Yeah, there's obviously another advantage there, but I'm just saying having money in general allows you to do what you want to do, which to an extent.
Yeah, to an extent, exactly. Because have you guys seen these guys? These people that, like, I forget who it was. I think it was like maybe Warren Buffett's kid or one of these famous billionaires had a son that had like the most embarrassing clothing line ever. Because as we're so often reminded, if you watch these shows like Real Housewives or whatever, which my girlfriend watches all the time, but like so often rich people do not have taste. You know, like taste is wasted on these people.
Price,
you know,
is what they pay attention to.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, true. People that are artists usually do have taste, so they're able to shape the tastes of their Nepo baby kids, which gives them an advantage as well.
That being said about Maya Hawke, I do think she's actually talented. I know it's unfair, you know, she's been giving a clear advantage, but I do actually think she's very talented.
Yeah. Same with like people like Jaden Smith. I think he's genuinely a decent musician.
I think he's a genuinely bad actor. But I think he's pretty good at music.
I think he's a decent musician.
I think Willow is better at music than Jaden.
She doesn't release very much music, though.
Dude, she made the Caught a Vibe song. Caught a Vibe. Baby, you know?
And she has some bangers.
Whip My Hair back and
hold
forth.
Hold on, wait a minute.
A classic.
I couldn't even name a Jaden Smith song.
90?
Has he had many bangers in his life?
He has quite a few. Icon?
Well, I don't even know
any of
that
shit. He
has the
one from Karate Kid Reboot. With the Justin Bieber collab.
No, Jaden just released some new music like a couple months ago, and it was pretty good. He's a good musician.
No, but like, again, you were saying it exists in every industry, but it's like, I don't know. So imagine some parent owns a fucking plumbing business. The only thing that gets passed down to that kid is $100,000 if he's lucky and a plumbing business. But when the name gets passed down to these actors, they can fucking do so much more with that. And we never can escape these kids. Like they'll be the next masters of the next generation.
I there's levels to this stuff, but like that's just part of life. Like nobody's on an even level playing field. Like it's not, life doesn't exist that way. We all have to fight. Most people have to fight 10 times harder to do the same thing as somebody else. Like it's just how it goes.
Yeah, but you're saying like there's nothing to be done about it. When I think the thing to do about it is to call it out, because now it's,
yeah, of course you can call it out.
Because maybe like I don't think before Nepo Baby became a meme, I don't think anyone was even thinking about this stuff in a negative light. Really,
I think they were
not to anywhere near the extent of what it is now.
Because I guess it depends how long back. Because we were just talking about him. What's his fucking name?
Jaden,
the writer.
Oh, Max Landis.
Oh, Max Landis.
Because Max Landis has been getting called out since he first made, like, came out with
Bright.
Not Bright.
Which is an amazing movie.
Chronicle.
Shut up.
he did Chronicle, and everybody's been calling him out since then, which I think that was
Chronicle's
like 15
good,
years
actually.
Ago.
Yeah.
I like Chronicle.
Yeah, potentially. But you have to admit, like, Nepo Baby is such a bigger deal now, though, like because of the meme, because it's got a catchy name to it, and because it's got a more or less like a social media movement behind it where everyone calls these people out now.
It's kind of all that can be done, like, you know, like what can be done.
I just don't know how
you can't really change privilege at this point in like this form where it's like, you know, like you were saying, Nick, it's like, you know, you can turn it into a meme and kind of poke fun at them.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they are seeing it, because there was that whole article that came out making fun of them, and that really got to them because there was a bunch of celebrities flocking to defend them. But, you know, that's about as much as we can do right now. Just make them aware that everyone knows you guys had, you know, privilege to get to your position.
Yeah.
I just don't know how much it bothers me, because I haven't seen that many instances where, like, they're horrible. Like, Colin Hanks, pretty fucking good actor.
Jack Quaid?
Chet Hanks, pretty
Jack
good
Quaid.
Fucking, just Dude, amazing person all around.
If we just had more Chet Hankses in the world, I think we'd be all right.
I love Chet
What
Hanks.
About John David Washington? I actually think he's not that great of
think,
an actor.
I think
I've
he's
seen.
Okay. He's
Is that fine. Denzel Washington's son?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know him.
I liked him in Black Klansman.
He was
more than
in
I liked
Tenet.
Him in most
oh.
things.
Oh, okay. I know.
He was the protagonist.
Yeah.
Actually, he was
very good. I felt like he was. No. Like,
he was in that show, the show with The Rock, where he's a football manager.
WWE.
But it was really good. It was really good. And he was good in it. But I think he's okay. I just haven't seen many where they're just like egregiously bad. Because I think if they were egregiously bad, they wouldn't be hired on more things.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like we're gonna go in circular conversations with it, just because there's always a reason for it, just beyond the name. Like I was saying before, they're just given so much access, you know.
The more I talk about it, the more okay I am with it. At the beginning, I thought I was against it, and now I'm just like, whatever.
Well, I think it's, yeah, you just get exposed to something enough, and it's like you're just throwing punches at ocean waves that are never going to stop coming. You know, like there's nothing to really be done about it, so you can't whip yourself into a frenzy about it. But it still does. It does annoy me. It annoys me when I see people like Maya Hawke just like popping up and everything. Although I love her dad and her mom.
Well, even like somebody like Jack Quaid just popping up at 30 years old, just being a known actor. That's annoying. Like, it's like, why?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Jack
Quaid. Which, Gula, if you look a lot like Jack Quaid somehow.
Holy shit.
Now that I think about it.
Oh, thanks.
Dude, Nick is Homelander and you're Huey.
Right? Why is Nick Homelander?
I don't know.
Because I'm evil?
I'm definitely not. I'm not Homelander. Nick is more Homelander.
Do you guys know the guy that plays Homelander is a New Zealander? So he stands like this.
His show's really good. His other show, Homelander.
His other show, Homelander show.
No, not Homeland. What's the fuck? I forget what it's called, but he's like plays some like detective down south or some. No, like he's pretending to be a detective, but he's like a bank robber and he's like hiding out. It's pretty good.
CSI, the Homelander Chronicles. It's just Homelander and
Anthony Starr.
Oh wait, no,
Anthony Starr. Are
you
Anthony Starr.
Are you talking about are you talking about Anthony Starr or Carl Urban?
Anthony Starr.
Oh, okay. He actually
Anthony Starr, Nick.
Anthony.
He almost he got into a spat in Brazil or something.
Like a fist fight.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. That's pretty intense.
I mean, I'm Homelander.
It's funny. Did y'all see he like did those like mobile ads for that mobile game? Mobile ads for that game, and he's like doing his American accent.
I'm playing Last War. It's actually a real game.
Yeah. There was a huge controversy, so the developers made a real game based off the fake games and the ads. Yeah, that was a ridiculous little thing to see happen.
I mean,
the fact that they would ask him, like, dude, we need you to sound like Homelander. Is that okay? But anyone who knows him personally,
the fact
is
that
like,
he agreed to do it, how much did they pay him?
Probably not a lot. I'm sure they just gave him. It probably took him a couple hours for one day, and he got paid. You know, maybe even like 20 grand.
I don't know,
like
man.
Still pretty good.
No, dude, way more
than
20. Way more.
Way more than 20.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like $20,000 worth of work. Even
those games make so much money.
Yeah, he's getting paid a couple million at least.
I mean, that sounds high, but I would say it's definitely more than 20 grand.
All right.
But,
well, I think the,
he has his name attached to some, or name attached to some shitty game.
I think we're wrapping up or we're reaching our end. I think we can all agree, right?
You want to give our special announcement for next week?
Special announcement. We are, not continuing with a straight up recommendation from, VHS Nick. Instead, we're going to be joined by a special guest. We're going to be joined by the YouTuber Rendon Lovell. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but we will ask him next episode. And we are going to be watching his movie recommendation, which is going to be Krisha from 2015, directed by Trey Edward Schultz.
Oh, cool.
So if you do not want to be spoiled for Krisha by Trey Edward Schultz from 2015, make sure to watch it for next episode when we have Rendon on the pod. If you enjoyed this episode and you're listening to on YouTube, please leave a like, give us a comment, let us know what you think. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a review because that really helps us out. You know, as always, get Stuckmanized, everybody.
Yeah, this is a particular Stuckman episode because we got the Empty Man, or at least I knew about the Empty Man thanks to him. So,
thank you, Chris, for presenting me with the Empty Man. Thank you.
Get Stuckmanized. We're working our way up. We're going to get Stuckman on here eventually.
We'll get him on here. We'll get him. Stuckman, we're coming for you. Goodbye.